Welcome to the PureMed podcast special series, Behind Diagnoses Patients. My name is Leah Sarapir, and I am your host. Behind Diagnoses Patients aims to uplift patient voices, to share their insight and experiences navigating the healthcare system. It welcomes everyone from patient advocates, the chronically ill, the disabled, and those with rare diseases to offer suggestions for a more equitable world. On our first episode, I'm pleased to welcome Jenny Jones, who is diagnosed with familial adenomatous polyps and short bowel syndrome. Today, we have Jenny here, and we are so excited for her to tell her story in a way that communicates the good and bad of our healthcare system, her concerns and suggestions for a more equitable world. So I'd like for you, Jenny, to take it away and tell us about yourself, your story, and what inspired you to become a patient advocate.
Well, first, thank you so much for having me on here. So I have familial adenomatous polyposis, which is a rare genetic disease. And we knew that my mom and my grandfather have it. So they knew there was a chance that I would have it, but they didn't really think I would need to be tested until I was in high school. But when I was in the third grade, I started having ongoing stomach pain that was not getting better. And the insurance that my parents had required a referral in order to see a specialist. So they had to take me to the pediatrician, and she did not think there was anything wrong with me. I don't know if she was aware of our family history or not. And with it being a rare disease, she may not have known anything about FAP to begin with. But she told my parents I was just a whiny child and refused to refer me. So that was a big obstacle for me to get care, obviously. I eventually was able to get to be seen by a gastroenterologist, a specialist. And as soon as she heard about the family history, she was on top of it, and she ordered me genetic testing and a colonoscopy and an upper scope and everything to figure out what was going on. So I got diagnosed, and then within a year of that, my colon polyps were starting to turn cancerous. So I had to have my colon removed. I was going to have a reversal, have an ostomy, and then have it reversed into a J pouch. So two surgeries. But I had complications. Then ER doctor dismissed me when my parents took me to the ER to explain that I had stomach pain. They said there was nothing wrong with me. All they did was an x-ray that showed nothing. Well, when you have an obstruction in your intestine, that doesn't always show up on an x-ray. And so you need more testing, but that wasn't done. So by the next morning, my parents took me back, and it was discovered that my small intestine had wrapped around itself and my surrounding organs, and it had cut off my blood supply. It killed part of my small intestine. And the doctors couldn't believe I had lived through the night like this. So I ended up having five surgeries that year. And then in high school, I had my ostomy reversed finally, and I had complications because of my adhesions that affected my health. So I had to have surgery again the next year to remove adhesions. And then my health stabilized over the next 5 years. And then in the last 6 years, I started having increased chronic pain and chronic nausea. And now I'm going to be having to have an 8th surgery to have my gallbladder removed. But that's mine in a nutshell.
Thank you so much, Jenny, for sharing that. It's amazing how much you've been through and how strong you are to be here in front of us and with us here today. But I wanted to ask you, what has been the financial situation, and what role has your diagnosis had on your financial situation? Has it been a burden, or have you had the opportunity to have a very supportive family that has been there for you?
My parents are amazing. And as you can imagine, the medical bills for myself and my mom when I was on my parents' insurance was it was quite a burden. It was difficult for my parents because there would be a lot of times that we met stop loss because of all our hospitalizations and both of our surgeries and all of our things. It hasn't been, not now as an adult and not being on my parents' insurance anymore, it hasn't been overly burdensome for me. I have really good health insurance right now that covers 90% of my bills, which is not very common here. It's usually 80%. Yeah. So that's really helped out. And fortunately, I have a good job. I'm able to work full time. And so that helps me meet those financial bills that that come across because of the medical. And I know there's so many people who are not nearly as lucky as I am with it. And it's a huge struggle for a lot of people, though. So I'm very fortunate.
I'm glad to hear that there's been the stability that has been there in place for you, because it's not easy to go through the healthcare system and to be dealing with financial difficulties to receive the surgeries and essential treatments that we need to care for our patients. But in the process, when you received your diagnosis, Jenny, did you feel that you were treated as a person, as a human being, and not someone with just another disease or diagnosis?
I mean, I definitely, with the pediatrician, I did not feel listened to or as a patient. But once I got to my gastroenterologist, she was absolutely wonderful. And she was a pediatric gastroenterologist, and she actually kept me from the age of 8 or 9 to, I think, 29 is when she finally said, okay, you need to see an adult now, adult specialist.
Yeah.
And so she always treated me with such great care. It was a wonderful advocate for me.
That's amazing.
I've been pretty lucky too with my adult specialists that I've had. There was one doctor who, I mean, he would do the tests or whatever I wanted him to do to monitor things, but he did not find them necessary, but he would do them. So it was kind of a give and take there. But I have another doctor, a different doctor now, that he's since retired, and I feel more listened to by him.
And Jenny, what matters to you when interacting with health professionals or undergoing these invasive examinations? Is there any one thing that you feel that matters to you most over something else?
Well, I have a lot of trust issues with providers because of the trauma that I endured as a child. So I definitely have to be listened to. I need a doctor to listen to me and to treat me with care and respect and take me serious. And we may not agree on everything, and that's okay. But as long as I feel that they have my best interests at heart, then I feel like I can trust them. Especially if they'll be willing to, you know, look into things for me when I have questions. And, you know, I come up with all kinds of questions for my doctors that may mean nothing. But as long as they're willing to listen to me and take that question serious and do their best for me, I'm pleased.
Yes. And lately, Jenny, we've been seeing a rise where patients have been coming forth and putting forth their stance that they're not happy with the healthcare system of how providers and health professionals are treating them. And many have reported that they were often dismissed or discriminated against. And so in your opinion, do you think that this is coming from issues such as racism, or has there just been a total decline in humanism in medicine?
I mean, I think there's, you know, I don't know that they always mean to, but I think doctors can definitely be prejudiced against people. I feel like my doctors in the past, that I would have been taken more serious if I had been an adult and if I had been a male instead of a young girl. Mm-hmm. And I think definitely that, I think some providers definitely do take racist stances. You know, I think we see that with pain medication, not just for women. You know, we don't get as much pain care as men do, but I think people of color are subjected to that too, more so than non-people of color.
Yeah, 100%. And so should healthcare professionals or those question their gender biases, and what do you think, how can they improve their medical interactions with patients?
I think, you know, if providers treat everybody as, you know, a loved one, as someone that they care about, and they don't look at someone's race or their gender as to determine if that person feels pain or not, because we all feel pain. And, you know, it's not that, I don't think women have a higher pain tolerance than men. I think we're just, there's that stereotype belief that we do. And I think people just aren't being taken serious. They're being dismissed. And so definitely, would I treat this person differently if they were a different gender or had a different skin color? I think needs to be a question every time a provider has a patient.
Definitely. And so, Jenny, have you joined groups with those who share the same common disease or condition or situation as you? Or have you had other patient advocates reach out to you? And in which way do you believe that patients can ensure that they feel respected, understood, and heard of utmost importance?
I definitely have joined. There's FAPvoice.com, which is like it's a mix of social media and like a database for patients with FAP. And then there's also several Facebook groups for FAP patients that I've joined so that I can connect to people, because it's hard to find people in person with a rare disease. So that's been absolutely wonderful resource for me. And I forgot the other question.
And how can patients such as yourself feel heard, understood, respected?
Oh, I think definitely we have to advocate for ourselves. We have to stand up, and we can do that tactfully and respectfully too. And I know that can be hard sometimes when you're not being listened to and you feel angry. I know I have a hard time with that sometimes myself. But if we clearly communicate our concerns, our questions, and our needs to our doctors, and give them the chance to reciprocate that back to us, to communicate back. And then if we are not happy, we don't feel satisfied with the care that we're getting after that, I think that we definitely need to practice finding another provider, because there are, I know with the rare disease community, it's not always easy to find someone else, but there are ones out there. Sometimes we have to travel, hopefully not, that's a burden in itself, but I think we have to speak up. Otherwise, our doctors aren't going to know what we're needing.
Absolutely. And so we went over the role of health professionals and the steps that they can take to question their bias and ensure that they treat their patients with care. And we went over the role that patients have in their own care and in owning up and advocating for themselves. But Jenny, how can we ensure that a community fosters more inclusive, equitable, and safe spaces for patients, and that essentially each patient is seen as a human being first?
I think definitely, you know, that, especially since there are communities with social media, with things, you know, voicing our experiences to each other is a step so that, you know, we don't feel alone in it. And then if we speak out about it in our communities, then we can collaborate and say, okay, maybe, you know, maybe we need to make a movement type of thing, make an effort. We can make a letter, we can address medical licensing or boards or you know, who can we reach out to say this is a problem, and, you know, let's bridge this gap between patient and provider and try to work on it together, I think would be a good option.
And if there's anything that you could tell providers or those students in training right now, how possibly they can empower others in your situation or others with rare diseases, what would it be?
I think, you know, I harp on this a lot, but definitely listening to us. Now, especially with rare disease, we don't always know what questions we should ask. We don't always know the research. I mean, I think it's good for patients to definitely research and try to stay on top of things, but that's not always easy to do, and not everybody does it. And so we need providers to also be our advocate for us. That can make a huge difference in the patient-provider relationship and the care that's received. And that can also help us become, you know, when we feel listened to, that gives us motivation too. And maybe even it's telling your patients, you know, these are good resources that I'm aware of, and you can look into them also and learn more. That would help teach patients that they have this option and how to do it too.
Absolutely. And so, Jenny, as most majority of the audience of the PMED podcast are students, we are asking you what can be done to improve the healthcare system. And although this is a loaded question, although there's a multitude of answers to this, in your opinion, what would be the most important aspects that we can use to improve the healthcare system?
I think one thing is definitely taking your patients' concerns and their symptoms serious, because there's so many different things that I know things can be, but if we're not taken serious and it's not investigated and things are not ruled out, then it takes a really long time to find a diagnosis, a long time to get treatment. So please take us serious, you know, ask us questions, and try to help us figure out what's going on, you know. And I think don't be afraid to ask us what we think it is, because a lot of us do research things and we may be wrong about it. You know, I mean, not saying that we should have to, you know, diagnose our things from Google, but, you know, we have an idea of what's going on in our bodies, and maybe we won't have the right diagnosis, but maybe we can help you get there to diagnose us together to make the difference.
That's beautifully said, Jenny. And if there's anything we can do from supporting and amplifying patient voices, what would that be besides improving the healthcare system?
I think research is really needed for treatment options for things, especially with rare disease. So whether that's maybe helping collaborate with things or bring awareness to it, you know, those type of things to help find people to invest in and donate to the research funds would be a wonderful thing to help patients.
Exactly. And I feel that from starting to support and amplify patient voices, that's everything from protecting the patient and their rights, improving communication, activating like a whole entire network of support for patients, establishing health systems and federal policies that serve patients' needs, and put in the process putting patient voices first. And I think only then can we truly deliver the highest and consistent quality care that is possible. And for you, during the COVID-19 pandemic, was your situation made worse? Was it made better? Did you feel that that physicians were more prone to communicating or listening to you, or did you feel the complete opposite, that it became increasingly more difficult?
I felt like the first year of COVID, it wasn't really different for me medically, but this year, I knew I was due for my GI scopes, and then I found out that I would end up needing to have surgery. And I mean, my doctors have been great, but one of the problems for me in my care is that the hospitals are requiring COVID tests, which, I mean, I understand why that's needed. But for me, I have part of my PTSD from my medical things is that I have a fear, a trauma of things being in my nose from NG tubes. And so for me, a COVID test was a really big deal. It made me not want to go in to get things done, because I was just so terrified of having that done to me. I was lucky that at the time the COVID cases were low enough that I didn't have to get a COVID test during when I had my GI scopes, but I had to have one for my surgery that's upcoming. And it was, although it was not physically a painful encounter, it was a psychologically terrifying experience. But the nurses were really great with me, and they helped me through it, and they were understanding, and they were not rude or judgmental about any of it, which helped make me feel better after all of it and to get through it.
Yeah. And Jenny, how do you cope with that trauma and that PTSD that you still face to this day? How do you cope with it?
Well, counseling, I went to counseling for several years, and I still go to counseling off and on when I feel that I need to. And that's really helped. It's made a big difference. But with the COVID test, I learned that my best efforts to cope with it, I didn't really cope with it at all. I reverted back to that young, terrified little girl. But I think like facing the surgery and things like that, I will cope better with than the COVID test or having an NG tube inserted. But I think there's I still have progress to make, but counseling has really made a big difference for me to learn and process what I've gone through.
And Jenny, if there's anything or anyone wanting to share a story and they're too afraid to come out, what is something you would say to them?
You are not alone. You may feel alone. And when I started sharing my story, I did it anonymously because one, I didn't feel very, I felt very alone. I felt very ashamed. I felt like I couldn't say who I was. But the more I shared, the more people reached out to me and they told me their stories and they gave me support and they gave me the strength to identify myself. And I think that has helped. I hope that has helped someone else to do the same. So it just, however makes you feel comfortable, share your story. And that way you can see the support that you can get from that. And that can give you strength too.
Jenny, you are so brave, you are so strong, and you are an inspiration for so many out there. And I can only hope that many hear your story on the Pyramid Podcast and that they feel empowered to tell their story in their own words. And so, with this, Jenny, I would like to thank you from the bottom of our hearts for really coming onto the Pyramid Podcast, for your vulnerability, for sharing your story. When patients are truly engaged and advocate for their own health, their voices are sufficiently amplified to be able to clearly communicate which healthcare priorities are the most important for them, for which inclusion in the design of the healthcare policies and systems. The focus of patient advocacy is on maximizing health and wellness and not just on preventing and treating disease. So, from all of us at the Pyramid Podcast on the Behind Diagnosis Patient Series, thank you so much for joining us here today. It means a lot.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
I'd like to thank our sponsors, Hashtag Rising Youth, the Government of Canada, Canada Service Corps, and Taking It Global for supporting and funding the project. I'd also like to thank the incredible individuals, voices, and patients who appear on the series and whose stories will guide medical education, clinical practice, and healthcare innovation. Listen in and listen now to the Behind Diagnoses Patient Special Series on the Pyramid Podcast to ensure change for a better world. Catch us on the next episode in conversation with another incredible patient advocate. And if you need more information, do not hesitate to email us at pyramidfoundation@gmail.com. Thank you for tuning in. Stay safe, stay healthy. Listen in and listen now to the Behind Diagnoses Patient Special Series on the Pyramid Podcast to ensure change for a better world. Catch us on the next episode in conversation with another incredible patient advocate. And if you need more information, do not hesitate to email us at pyramidfoundation@gmail.com. Thank you for tuning in. Stay safe, stay healthy.